No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Rudin. Welcome to the show as we have our second training camp, our second, training camp show, preseason show, as the Arizona Cardinals have played one game. It wasn't pretty throughout the entire game. The Cardinals end up losing handily 34-19 to the Kansas City Chiefs in their preseason opener. And they begin their preseason 0-1 in that real fake football time of year. There are some news to talk about, however, is the rumored addition of running back Chris Johnson has actually occurred. And the Cardinals made that official just yesterday, or rather just on Monday. And Chris Johnson is now a member of the Arizona Cardinals, signing a one-year deal worth up to $2 million. It's a minimum contract, a veteran minimum with incentives that include Pro Bowl up to, you know, he can make all of his money if he goes to the Pro Bowl, if he rushes for 1,300 yards. We haven't been without some downsides, however, in the game on Saturday. The Arizona Cardinals ended up losing one of their young camp body safeties in Brandon Person towards ACL. He was wave injured to make room for him. Just recently, outside linebacker Zach Wagaman out of Montana, undrafted rookie, came into camp with a foot injury, has broken his foot, and was wave injured as well. And they added safety Anthony Walters on Tuesday to take his roster spot. In terms of injuries, the running back group is all back to the playing field. They all practice today, every single one of them. And we're basically down in terms of key players being hurt, down to just Sean Weatherspoon, who had some sort of setback last week with his hamstring. And that's where we're at. The starters played one series on Saturday. The offense took advantage, went 7 plays, 80 yards, scored a touchdown. Carson Palmer was 4-4 for 77 yards. And Andre Ellington punched the ball in from 2 yards out with the help of a big Mike Iupati block. And then as well, the starting defense was on the field for 5 plays, forced turnovers as pressure from Dion Buchanan forced Alex Smith into a bad throw that went right to Tyrann Mathieu. Then the second team offense went about 2 yards, kicked a field goal, and got off to a great 10-0 lead. Then after that, it sort of fell apart. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about several things as I bring on Seth Cox, as we do. And this show, Revenge of the Birds Radio Show, is brought to you by Audible.com. Is brought to you by Audible.com, where you get the internet's leading source of audio content. And you can get a free audiobook now if you try out the service. You can sign up for a trial, get that free audiobook download as they are friends of the show. Go to audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. That's Audible Trial, AudibleTrial, not trail, but trial, audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. So what do we have in store for tonight, Seth? Let's bring Seth Cox in as we do at the beginning of our review show and our preview show. Seth, how's it going, and how was seeing real fake football for you?
It's good. I've got it on right now as we talk, so just kind of reviewing everything that I've already reviewed, but saw some interesting comments, so I want to go back and double-check myself before I started ranting. So,
excuse me. Well, let's talk about the game first. After all, that is what happened. We sort of talked about You know, we talked about Chris Johnson a week ago, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. I forgot to mention for you Cardinals fans, if you have been paying attention, Bradley Saul is the guy who's running the first team right tackle. While Bruce Arians said it was they're building depth just in case, they had the leak. They haven't heard anything official from the league in terms of a suspension. Clearly, they know that it's likely going to happen. So Bobby Massey is now riding the pine in practice, per se, working with the backups in the third teams. While Bradley Saul, our favorite offensive lineman, is apparently going to be the guy to stand in for Massey until he returns. Now, let's talk about that game. So we've got the first team performance. If you look at it, if you're watching the game for the first time, you're like, wow, Bruce Arians said it was going to be one series of whether it's one play or 10 plays. They get 7 plays and they score a touchdown. They were effective moving down the field. It was quick. Carson Palmer looked extremely accurate. He spread the ball around, got a catch to John Brown, got J.J. Nelson and 2 catches to Andre Ellington. And then you got down to the 2, and you get to see on that running play, you got Mike Iupati actually maul someone in it, and actually smash Larry Fitzgerald in the process to spring Andre Ellington to get in the end zone. What did you like most about the first team performance, the starters?
I talked about it in my preview, what to watch type thing, but I thought, I said you want to see the starters in the passing game come out on time. The one thing I harped on before the game in that article was that I didn't think at all that the offensive line was going to, do a good job in the run game. And I was kind of right. I mean, I think Andre Ellington had, 4 yards and a touchdown on 2 or 3 carries.
Yeah.
So, it was that's exactly what I expected from the offensive line in the running game because, as we talked about last week and as I wrote about, this team, these 5 guys, haven't really played together with a running back at all during camp. So the game was really their first chance, and, it's going to take the preseason, but it's probably going to take 2 to 3 to 4 games into the regular season to get that rhythm and to gel and to get that cohesiveness that, great offensive lines like the Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles have. But I thought, on the flip side, the passing game was exactly what you needed and wanted to see because you're talking about, outside of J.J. Nelson and John Brown, you're talking about a bunch of guys that have been in the system for, 3 years now. So they have a rapport with each other. They have a feeling with each other. Andre Ellington, showed that off with his catch and run. On a ball that, this is what we've talked about before with Carson Palmer, on a ball that he shouldn't have thrown, but he threw and he completed it and it went, however many yards, 78, whatever, 3 yards, 76 yards, I don't remember, but
57,
57 down to the, down to the 3 or 4, whatever it was. And that's what, you kind of wanted to see from this team. You wanted to see that type of cohesiveness. You wanted to see them be on time and in rhythm, and I think you saw that with the first team. And honestly, you couldn't have dialed it up better because when it's all said and done, this is a passing team, and to get started fast, they have to be effective in the passing game.
And well, I was really impressed with the pace. But they kind of talked about it. They kind of practiced it last year. They kind of practiced it last year in the offseason. We didn't really talk about it. It was the no huddle. But it got more press this offseason. And what do you know? We actually saw an offense that was moving very quickly, which is not necessarily a Bruce Arians thing. But rather, they were moving, getting in and out of the huddle quickly, where there was no huddle, but they were moving fast. And I really loved the pace of that. It's something fun to see, especially if you can move the ball. Because if you move too fast and then gain nothing, then it does nothing to the clock. So I was real thrilled with that. I noticed at least within the minimal time that they saw, but over basically through the whole game. Something the Cardinals have always struggled with is running the ball out of big formations. They're two tight end, three tight end sets. When they're in a formation that says, hello, we're running, they weren't successful, and they saw more success when they were spread out with three wide receivers and they could do things in space. Even Robert Hughes had more success like that. I mean, the running game overall was very unsuccessful. But you always take that with a grain of salt looking in the preseason. Was there anything critical? Is there anything out of the starters on either side of the offense or defense? Was there anything that you kind of take pause and say,
I wonder who's going to be the pass rusher, but on something that I'll, talk about when I talk about the second team and the Chiefs and everything. The first team guys, so Alex Okafor, whoever's going to be opposite him, I'm not worried about what Alex Okafor does as a pass rusher because his whole thing right now is just to stay healthy for me. Like, he's not, Justin Houston or Tom Bahali, but he is the best the Cardinals have. So all that matters is that he's healthy. It'll be great if he, gets a couple sacks in the preseason, but does it matter, in the scope of things, if he ends up with, 8 or 10 or 12 sacks in the regular season? No. So I think you could be kind of critical on the other guys, though, because I think they're all auditioning for that, kind of starter opposite Okafor, and somebody needs to show something. And so I thought he had some flashes, but I know, Lorenzo Alexander, Lamar Woodley, and those two guys didn't really get much time in the game, but I think you want to see just a little more finish. I know right now the whole, hurries and quarterback hits and pass rush productivity from Pro Football Focus, and then I think it was Josh Norris who coined the phrase disruption equals production. I know that's really cool and everything right now, but as Cardinals fans, we know that that's really not true, especially when you're in a division with Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson. So just a little bit more finishing on the pass rush, but I think that'll come. Like I said, Okafor I'm not worried about because he's just got to stay healthy. But the other guys, I just want to see him finish.
For me, I was more impressed. There wasn't really anything that stood out to me as other than, it's a passing game, so I would have liked to have seen a little bit more success running the ball. But they did exactly what they needed to do in terms of the starters. On the other side of the ball, in defense, they were good. I mean, they gave the first down. They gave the first down and then got the turnover. And what you got to see was Deion Buchanan, who, if you look at what he did, that A-gap blitz, guess what? He looked better this year to it. He was taking a better angle. He was quicker off the ball. And he didn't hit Alex Smith, but his presence there made Alex Smith throw awful ball, and Alex Smith is not a terrible quarterback, and he just threw a terrible, terrible pass.
No, he is a terrible quarterback. But I mean,
no, terrible. Saying, that's though. John Skelton, Tim Tebow, and Ryan Lindley. Alex Smith is an able quarterback.
I'm with you. I thought that was, that is where disruption equals production for me. Like, when it affects the throw. I really thought he was offsides, though, to be completely honest. When you go back and look, I'm not even trying to be a damper. It legit looked like he jumped offsides, or at least went into the neutral zone and then got back. But, I think he looked kind of Darryl Washington-like there. And we know how important that's going to be, because who knows when that guy's going to play again.
Well, and even Bruce Arians has talked about, who's three down line, and he's saying that Deion Buchanan is basically their three down lineman, the linebacker that is. Interesting thing that I saw, if you look at the depth chart from last week, the depth chart said that the starters at safety were Tyrann Mathieu and Tony Jefferson. But what we saw, and the Cardinals came out in a base because I guess they Kansas City lined up two tight end to start off. And they lined up in a base, and you know who the two safeties were? It was Tyrann Mathieu and Deon Buchanan, which, to be honest, that's the first time I've ever seen that combination at safety. Now, Rashad Johnson came in, and Tony Jefferson came in when they went dime because Ty went into the slot, and then Buchanan lines up at the linebacker spot. But holy cow. Holy cow. I mean, it was. Imagine Ty and Buchanan kind of getting things together, the amount of playmaking and dynamic things that could happen if they're both on the field at the same time in the secondary.
Well, I think what you're going to end up seeing, and what we saw a little bit of, was you're going to see, like you said, Deon kind of down as the linebacker. You're going to see Tyrann used as that nickel dime back type of safety rover guy, and then you're going to have then you're going to probably see Tony and Rashad in. So, you know, that'll be probably used in game one quite a bit when you're going up against the Saints who are going to spread the ball out and throw it around. But, you know, as the season progresses, as you said, I think Tyrann and Deon playing together is going to be something that we see kind of more common, especially against teams that run the ball a lot, because both those guys excel playing against the run and being able to move down into the box and make plays that way. So I think that's something that we're going to see more of throughout the year, but I think it's going to be in different ways. Like you said, the base look as kind of safeties will be here and there, but we'll see them on the field quite a bit together as kind of a pairing. And by the way, I think we both forgot to mention, and we should have, Justin Bethel played a hell of a game at cornerback.
That's true. And in fact, let's go ahead and jump into that part, and that would be, who stood out? Who stood out to you? You're already talking about Bethel. Give us your take on JB.
Well, I thought, first off, was there any announcement of why Gerard didn't play at all?
It was just precautionary that he had the oblique strain earlier in the week and he'd come back to practice, okay. But BA just didn't want to risk it. There was no reason on a first preseason game to put Gerard out there. And okay. I mean, he gave him an extended look at Bethel because he played a lot of snaps.
He did. He played a ton of snaps. But I thought Bethel looked really good. I thought he did a good job matching up. He was matched up against Macklin a couple times and, you know, gave up some catches. But when you're kind of cornerback, 3-4, going up against wide receiver 1, you know, that's okay. You're going to give up catches, especially against Jeremy Macklin, who's, you know, a good receiver in this league. I thought overall he did a really nice job of showing off the ability that we know he has to start, stop, and change directions, but he showed that as a defensive back as opposed to a gunner. And you can just definitely see the growth in who he is as a player, and that's something that you wanted to see coming into this game. The other guy for me that stood out on defense, and there's a lot of guys I can go through, the Martin brothers, and I know they're not related, but Kareem and Gabe, I thought both played extremely well. I thought Rodney Gunter was the best rookie that played in the game, and, you know, that's not a knock on anybody else. I thought all the rookies looked good at times, but I just thought Gunter was the best. But the other guy that really stood out to me was Xavier Williams, and that's a guy that we talked about all the way back in May when they signed him as an undrafted free agent. And, you know, I didn't know 90% of the names you gave me, but I knew Xavier Williams.
And I told you true.
And I told you I thought he was going to make this roster, and that I was impressed with who he was as a player. And, you know, we've heard about it in OTAs and then at camp, and he comes out in the first game and kind of continues that. I really think he's going to make this roster. I don't know if it makes Te'Amu expendable, but I think he makes the roster despite whatever happens with Alameda Te'Amu.
Well, and you have to look at the fact that where Alameda is playing, because Williams was playing ahead of him at nose tackle.
Yep.
And so, yeah, a couple players that stood out in my mind. Marcus Golden didn't finish well, but he was around. He was, if you kind of look at it, he's exactly the type of thing that they talked about. He is a super high motor guy who's going to be always going to be around the quarterback. The one thing the Cardinals have to teach him is to contain, is to not. Otherwise, he'll overrun the play, and especially when you're going against a Kaepernick and a Wilson. Guess what? You're gonna leave that side of the field wide open for them, just to step out of the pocket and run for yards and yards and yards. Jackson Shipley is another one's kind of interesting, especially when Britton Golden, while you know he's right now is considered the starting returner for both punt and kick. But when he was on the field and on the receiver, one of the crucial things is, guess what? He dropped the touchdown pass, what would have been a touchdown pass from Logan Thomas, and with Shipley. And initially, I thought we were going to see a battle between J.J. Nelson and Britton Golden. Perhaps seeing a repeat of last year when Jerron Brown ended up beating out Walt Powell for the last receiver spot. That we might end up seeing the same type of situation, Britton Golden and J.J. Nelson. Now, J.J. Nelson, he's apparently tasked everyone in the depth chart. And now Britton Golden looked like a lock for that sixth receiver spot. But if you see Jackson Shipley, who can return kicks, he can return punts, he's sure-handed, and he flashed a little bit in the passing game. Maybe that spot for Golden isn't as set as one might have thought. The other player that stood out to me, and I think everyone was happily surprised, was to see the composure of Logan Thomas. He looked like, he didn't look like a rookie. He looked like a legitimate quarterback out there. He wasn't, his drops were better. He wasn't, and it wasn't the same type of performance as he had last year in the preseason opener when he was, first read throw. Now, he had a couple of those, but there were some where he was actually making progressions. He was going through his progressions and making reads, and guess what? He was successful at it, and even though his stat line wasn't impressive, he was really let down by a couple of his receivers. The interception that he had should have been caught by Jerron Brown, so that shouldn't have been an interception. And he didn't end up with the touchdown, and Britton Golden should have held onto that ball. That's a play that any professional receiver should make. And so instead of the line, he should have had, you know, a couple of more completions for some more yards and one touchdown and no interceptions. And guess what? Then we're talking about, you know, instead of just how he looked, you're talking about solid production. Can he repeat that against the Chargers?
Yeah, and I thought Thomas, I figured you were going to talk about him, so I let you have that, but I thought Thomas looked extremely good. And I jokingly, kind of tongue-in-cheek, asked a question on Twitter, you know, when does Thomas pass Stanton on the depth chart? But, you know, and as tongue-in-cheek as it was, it's something that, you know, it's not going to happen this year, partially because Bruce Arians loves Bruce Stanton, but partially because, let's be honest, they probably need three bodies at the quarterback position, with, you know, Palmer being old and Drew Stanton just being hurt every year he's asked to play in football. So having three guys is probably the best route to go anyway, so we'll see what happens with that. But I think Logan's progressions through this year, obviously through last year and then into this year, if it continues to trend upwards, I think that's important for 2016, because Drew's a free agent, right?
Or yes, he is.
That's what I thought. So I think you let him walk if he continues to produce and grow, and then, you know, you have Carson and Logan and, you know, draft pick A, B, C, whatever, or veteran, you know, backup. Or whatever. Or maybe Philip Sims can see by then, and he'll be able to do
it. Yeah, that's an interesting story. That's a really interesting story. Philip Sims is another guy that didn't look bad out there.
He was definitely let down by his teammates.
Oh, my goodness. He had, I mean, his receiver. Now, you look at the end. These were the back of the roster receivers, but they just did not make any plays for him at all. And well, that in the offensive line, but he looked good. He looked like he knew what he was doing back there. It wasn't just looking like crazy. If I ever, if you kind of look back, Logan Thomas looked lost back there outside of his performance in the preseason opener. And if you look back when he played against Denver, he looked lost. And he had the one throw to Ellington that was dynamic, but everything else, we just looked lost.
Yeah, when they asked him to actually like read defenses and stuff, yeah, definitely. There are some issues. We can move on to the who didn't look good, but I think we both have talked about it and kind of, you know, pushed it around. But man, Kareem Martin, maybe he's in his right spot now as an outside linebacker, right? Like, I thought he looked really good.
Yes,
he almost killed Chase Daniel on the one play.
And then, I saw your tweet. He killed him dead.
You talk about explosive athletes off the edge. He is that, and you know, you pair that with kind of Okafor's well-rounded game, and then you have Golden's motor. I think that gives you some options off the edge, and then obviously Lamar Woodley, I thought, looked good. Now it was nine plays against guys that aren't going to be on the roster, but I thought he looked good when he was out there.
Which he should at this point in his career. He should look good. I mean, you'd worry about that. I just want to point this out. You know, things started going south for the Cardinals. However, in that game, the Chiefs played a different game plan than the Cardinals. The Cardinals had their starters out there for one series. They had their second stringers out there for the rest of the third quarter, for the rest of the first quarter. And so, if you looked at how things happened, the ones-on-the-ones, the Cards dominated. The Chiefs' starting offense against the Cardinals' second stringers had two possessions. They gained only a few yards. There was a punt force, and then there were just a few yards they gave up before the field goal. And then after that, it was a lot of the... When things sort of fell apart for the Cardinals is when it was the Chiefs having their second string offense against the Cardinals' third stringers. And that's why you can't read, I mean, in terms of the score, you can't really look too much really at all at it, considering that's not real life. There, unless you have a drastic situation, there's no situation where you're going to be playing second stringers against third stringers from another team. So there was a lot of optimism that even the second line defense held up really well, and that was something to be proud of.
Well, and that was my one kind of critique on Martin and Golden, was that they both got to go against, you know, twos and threes in their time. And like I said, I thought they both put some pressure and got some hits, but you just want to see him, like, I'm so tired of pressures, right?
Yeah.
Like, just finish eventually. And so that's, you know, again, back to the, like, how I would kind of be disappointed. I think that was it. Like, because if you're a three or two, and Golden and Martin are kind of two, three, you know, outside linebackers, and you're going up against twos, you know, if you're saying you want to see this guy progress and make plays, then you want to see him make plays against guys that are considered his equal. And, you know, it flashed at times, but like I said, just a finish, that's all.
And we talk about players that sort of disappointed. I already mentioned a couple. It would be Jerron Brown and Britton Golden. Jerron Brown has been the highlight maker in camp. But Bruce Arians was the first person to say, hey, he's made a lot of withdrawals. He's taken a few steps back. And it was good for him to, you know, to finally make a deposit after all those withdrawals. He was really he disappeared in that game. And then the one time he had a chance to make even a play, and he saw the you know, granted, Logan Thomas is a different sort of quarterback in terms of his ball. But guess what? You got to make those catches. I mean, he's practiced with them before. So make that catch, don't cause that turnover. And Britton Golden, who, again, you can't drop catches in the end zone. You can't. You can't leave points out there. And in the end, it was a preseason game. But that was disappointing. Jimmy McGree.
You can't leave those points out there when you're trying to make the roster. Too.
Exactly, like, exactly.
Like, in the regular season, like, Jerome Brown's drop in Seattle, like, that was disappointing. It didn't really change the complexion of the game, probably. But Brenton Goldman dropping a touchdown pass probably could change the complexion of his career, right? Like, instead of being that six wide receiver, all of a sudden now, you know, we're talking about Jackson Shipley because he caught some passes. So, I don't know. That's just how I feel about that type of stuff. Like, you know, it's, you know, you can't leave points on the field, yes, but more importantly, in this instance, you can't leave a job out there on the field.
No. Another player that was, you know, I actually happened to be talking about is, oh, he's, I think at this point he's pretty much a lock, Jimmy Legree. Oh, my heavens. What was he doing out there? There was the one deep pass play. He just had no idea what was going on. The receiver had cut. He was reaching back to see where the receiver was. He had the ball, and then Jimmy looks up into the air looking for where the ball was. There was that play. He got beat, I think, three or four times. That looked pretty bad, and it was very disappointing because he's a guy who, over the last 2 years, the past two off seasons, he's gotten a really good. He's gotten a lot of praise from Bruce Arians, and now I went from, you know, oh, I was telling people on Twitter during the game, yeah, I think Legree's a lock, because, well, one, there's no one else behind him. Two, well, kind of what Mike Jarecki said, he's a guy, guess what, the Cardinals are going to pick up, they're going to end up claiming a cornerback off waivers to fill their fourth corner spot.
Yeah, and I think Legree was kind of disappointing. You know, I'll probably make them people mad, but I was kind of disappointed in DJ Humphrey in pass protection. I thought Desmond Moses kind of worked him over when they were one-on-one. I saw some people today talk about how good DJ did against Justin Houston, and so that's part of the reason I went back and I looked at the game again. You know, Justin Houston pass rush on the two plays that he pass blocked him. The first play was a screen pass that Drew Stanton spiked, and then the second play, Houston ran the arc on him, and DJ recovered just in time to push him past him. So it wasn't like, one, you got a lot of read on either of them, but two, I think to say he did a good job on him is being really polite to DJ Humphrey in what the circumstances were. When he actually blocked them. But I thought, you know, and it's not all negative, because I thought DJ really came out and just played physical at the point of attack in the run game and really showed why everybody should be excited about what he can do. And maybe, and I think it kind of goes to show right now why he's running right tackle two still, and Bradley Stout running right tackle one, because he's just not quite where he needs to be in pass protection. So if you're going to give up a little more in the run game with Stout and get better pass protection, and I use that word very loosely.
he won't give up as many sacks, but there will be disruptions.
Yeah, and I think that's where Humphreys is right now. There were two plays in particular that Desmond Moses got by him, and DJ didn't even touch him. Like, he went into his pass set, and the first one was an inside-out move, and DJ lunged at the inside move, and next thing you knew, Desmond was hitting Logan Thomas on a little swing pass to Stephon Taylor. I mean, we're talking 2 seconds. That was all it took. And then the other move was the opposite. He went outside in. And I think from earlier, he was looking to save the corner and just gave up the inside. And like I said, all of that is just going to be about reps. Like, that's just going to be about DJ Humphreys actually playing football. Something, you know, in an offense that asks to block on 5- and 7-step drops, something that he's never had to do before. But when you watch them in in the run game after dislocating his finger and before dislocating his finger, you know, I don't think it would be out of the realm to say he was the best offensive lineman in the run game.
Let's move on a little bit and talk just a little bit more, not a whole bunch, because we talked about this on our last show, and that's Trisk Johnson, who is now official in Arizona Cardinal, signing for a veteran minimum contract with incentives of up to, that'll bring his contract up to $2 million. First and foremost, who do you think is the odd man out of the running backs now? Because obviously,
Kerwin Warren.
I think this is the exact same thing, and there's been some talk about a lot of people online about, well, Steph Taylor, he's trash, he's no good, except for this factor, and this is when you have a fourth running back. What does your fourth running back have to be? Extremely specialized. What does Stephon Taylor do? He does those specialized things. He can run short yardage. He's reliable on those things. He's really good. He's really solid in blocking and pass protection. And he's really good at special teams. And what do you want from a fourth running back on a team? Those exact traits. Kerwin Glenn hasn't quite shown that yet. He's not a great pass blocker. He's a better running back in terms of a runner.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But
like you said, if you're leaning on Kerwin Williams to get yards, we're already talking about problems for the Cardinals.
AKA like, 2014.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and that's not a shot at Kerwin, but, I mean, you've addressed the running back position heavily. Like, the Cardinals have invested heavily. You know, a six-round pick's not a heavy investment, but you're talking about now a six-round pick, a third-round pick, and now a veteran contract. Like, you're talking about three guarantees on the roster. Like, you know, you're not going to bring Chris Johnson in unless he's just completely fat and out of shape and cut him, you know, before the season starts. So you're talking about three guys that are guaranteed to be on the roster. So like you said, you're going to pay these guys and you're going to have them on the roster. I know Bruce Arians always says, oh, the best player played. But, yeah, those guys are capital. Like, you're going to give them way more of a chance than you are Kerwin Williams. And as you said, Stephon Taylor, not only is he excellent as a pass protector and, you know, short yardage guy, yeah, he's okay. And then as a special teamer, he's good. But he's also excellent in the passing game. I mean, he's a guy that when he's out there, he's not just in the pass block. Like, he's not a liability if he's out on a route to catch the ball.
And Seth, even though, if you recall, two off seasons ago, Bruce Arians was like, yeah, we're not going to throw to our running backs, really. Wait, now, that's kind of a staple in their offense now. That is getting the ball in the passing game to Andre Ellington, or it will be to Stephon Taylor, or to Chris Johnson, or David Johnson, that for that matter. With the one thing, and I think I've said it last week in the last show, is what this does, it's just another move, and I don't think you might have mentioned it. I happen to be on the radio on a local show just a few minutes before this. And if you look at a lot of the moves the Cardinals have done, I believe you and I were in a group text on this whole thing. Steve Keim and Bruce Arians recognize their situation. They are not relying on any young players unless they are a sure thing. They're not looking at any of their first or second year players and saying, you know, you've got the potential, so yeah, we're going to ride. No, they brought in, they got a fairly young A.Q. Shipley. He hasn't done as well as they'd hoped. The way they do, they'll bring back Lyle Sunline. You've got Darren Fells and Troy Nicholas and Ifani Moma. What do they bring in? Jermaine Gresham. You have some banged up running backs. You have like the whole running grab crew. Like basically all your good running, the talented running backs there. So you got Andre with the hamstring. You got David Johnson with the hamstring. You got Marion Grice with the hamstring. So we bring in David and Chris Johnson. So anywhere where they were perhaps going to rely on some young players, and David Johnson was originally, or he's projected to be, that other running back.
Too.
And guess what? Yeah. They decided, no, we're not doing that. We're not relying on a rookie. So so much for BA playing those rookies. And look at this. Guess what? Instead of putting Humphreys up on the first team to develop him, what are they doing? They're putting the guy they know, the devil they know, rather than the devil they don't, in Bradley Saul.
Right, and I think that's one of the things that gets overlooked. And something I tweeted at, you know, Adam Green from Arizona Sports Today. This roster, this coaching staff, and this front office, I think they're not worried per se, but I think they are aware of what happened in San Francisco, right? So they are aware that, it can go downhill quick if you don't do the right thing. And that's not to say that that's going to happen in Arizona at all. But, you know, we saw it in Arizona, too. Like, as soon as your veteran quarterback goes, like, if you don't have a plan in place, well, nothing, you know, really works the same anymore. And so I think when you look at it, you look at it and you hit it on the head. They're saying, we're not going to put ourselves in a position to go, what if? Because they've already done that, you know, right? They already did it in 2013. What if we start faster? What if we don't go, I think it was 2-4 out of the gate, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. What if we don't do that? And then last year, it's what if we had, you know, invested in, you know, a third quarterback? Or what if we hadn't, you know, put the capital into Logan Thomas and had somebody else there? Or what if Carson Palmer doesn't get hurt, you know, because we are playing Paul Fanica and Pat Larson on the offensive line? You know, just those types of things. So what are they doing? Like you said, they're not going to go, okay, what if A.Q. Shipley didn't get, you know, miss this line call and, you know, Carson Palmer gets decapitated? You know, what if David Johnson doesn't pull up lame with another hamstring injury? You know, like, there's not going to be any what ifs. Like, they're going to go out and they're going to bring in guys that, as you said, have produced and have done it year in and year out. I laugh at a lot of, like, the naysayers, right, saying, oh, this was a stupid signing by the Cardinals. You know, Andre Ellington and David Johnson are better than Chris Johnson. And you know what?
Maybe.
It's not just that. Maybe they are. But you know what Chris Johnson is?
Durable.
He is
durable.
Exactly. He's going to be out there for 16 games. And he's going to be able to carry the ball 200-plus times, and he's going to get 4.2 yards per carry, because that's what he's done for 8 years or however long he's been in the NFL.
And if
that's
you look,
who he is.
And if you look at that in terms of Cardinals running backs, that's fantastic. Fantastic. Outside from the – because I hope Ellington doesn't turn into a flash in the pan, but that's based on last year where he was hurt, and if he doesn't stay healthy this year – then basically his rookie season was a flash in the pan. I think there's one overlooked factor to this, to the addition of Chris Johnson. It's this. In 2013, Andre Ellington, well, that running back room was led by Rashard Mendenhall, a solid veteran in that locker room who kind of can lead the way and was an example on how to work. Last year, they lost that. They didn't have... Andre Ellington was the leader in the locker room. They didn't have that workmanship. They didn't have that professional workman there to kind of lead the way. Guess what they have now? Yeah, Chris Johnson has been a knucklehead in his career off the field, but when you look at what he is on the field and in the locker room, he is a hard worker. He can be that veteran example to push Andre to stay on the field and, well, just to play better when he's on the field and, you know, be a better example for the guys behind him as well.
Exactly. And, you know, I a lot of people were saying, you know, why do you think Chris Johnson's going to take the reps, you know, blah, blah, blah. My response to that is simple. I think Andre Ellington has a habit of being nicked up since he was in college. He's been nicked up every year since, you know, freshman year of college. He's had an issue. And I think that Johnson, as we said, is durable. So at some point, he's going to be the guy that starts to take the reps and lessen the burden of taking those cheap yard carries away from Andre Ellington, so Andre can be used in that, you know, 12 carries, 5 catches type role where he's really, really good, as opposed to please catch, you know, run the ball 18 to 20 times. Oh, and can you please also catch the ball 3 to 5 times? So
you're looking more like 15 to 20 touches rather than 20 to 25 touches. Even though that seems like a small amount, it becomes, you don't have to. Your offense isn't based on Andre Ellington.
Right, and what is interesting to me, and I didn't even know this until I went back and looked. So I went back and looked, and Ellington's never carried the ball more than, so his highest total carry in a season is 223. Like, that's the most carries he's had ever in a season. You put that in an NFL season, and that's not very many, like, per game. So, you know, that was in college, so it was just over 16 carries a game was the average. That, you know, you put him at 16 carries a game in the NFL, and, you know, you're not going to be expecting, you know, a guy that's going to be a 1,200, 1,300-yard back. You're talking about a guy that's at 800 to maybe 1,000-yard back. And I think that's kind of what he is. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it as a bad thing. I think that's a really good thing. I think he's going to get 40% of the carries. I think Johnson's going to get, you know, 40 to 50% of the carries, and the rest are going to be spread out between the rest of the guys, unless David Johnson comes out and proves us that he can play on Sunday. And, you know, it's not that he's a bust or anything. I've seen some people already say that. No, it's not that he's a bust. It's just that he's not here. So you can't grade him or rely on him.
Let's jump to one of the last sections we want to do, and that's talking about, this is one of these exercises in speculation. We've only had one preseason game, so let's kind of look at where you think the 53-man roster would look as of right now. I wrote about it on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Of course, if you're listening to the show, thank you. If you aren't aware already, this is the podcast show, the radio show for SB Nation's RevengeOfTheBirds.com, our Arizona Cardinals site, which I myself do run. I put together a 53-man prediction after their... I believe I had that up for Monday morning. So let's go through there and tell me where you agree and where you disagree. For obviously, there are 53 players left at quarterback. I decided... Now, initially, as of a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I believe the Cardinals would go with two on the active roster. And then perhaps it would be Phillip Sims on the practice squad. I think the only way Phillip Sims makes this team is on the practice squad, and it'll only be if they go with two quarterbacks on the active roster. But the play of Thomas told me, okay, I think that they're going to invest a roster spot. So it's going to be Palmer, Stanton, Thomas. Do you see it any differently?
No, but I do think Sims still makes it to the practice squad, even with three guys on the roster, because of 2000, with an eye on 2016.
We look at running backs. I have Andre Ellington, Chris Johnson, David Johnson, Stephon Taylor, and Robert Hughes. Do you see it going any differently than that?
The only thing I could see different is if Hughes is looked at as more as a H-back, and so they keep Gerald Christian. But on that front, Christian only got 17 snaps on offense.
And Hughes got looks on first team, second team, and third team. So
yeah, so I don't know if they're even planning on, you know, working him into more. So I think maybe it'll just be, like you said, it'll be the four plus Hughes as the fullback, and then maybe they try to sneak Gerald Christian onto the practice squad as well. You get 9 practice squad spots, right?
I think it's 10 this year. It used to be 8. I believe it's 10 for another year. I think Kerwin Williams would actually be practice squad eligible as well, and I think that's a definite possibility too.
Yep.
If we look at receiver, I personally don't think this is a lot of drama. This could become drama a little later on. I've got Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd, John Brown, J.J. Nelson, Jerron Brown, and Britton Golden. I think Shipley is more going to be on the practice squad if he doesn't get swiped somewhere else. However, I do think another game that Golden has that's not great, another one that Shipley shows that he can shine, maybe he can get past Golden on that one. Do you see that any differently, going with 6 receivers?
No, but I do have a question. Well, I mean, Golden's a toss-up. I mean, you could get Shipley, like you said, because I think he's better in the return game and just a more physical player. I think he'll end up being a special teams type of ace, too. But here's my question. Is Jerron Brown a lock for the roster? like as bad as he's looked?
And because of his special team work, I believe so, because he's pretty solid. Okay. He's a good gunner. So you have him opposite Justin Bethel. I think for his special teams play alone, I think he makes the roster. But I don't see him getting, I mean, outside of the first game or two while Michael Floyd is out, I don't think he ever sees the field all year on offense. Tight end, I have them going with four: Jermaine Gresham, Darren Fells, Troy Nicholas, and Ifeanyi Moma. This is where I think the Gerald Christian gets bumped. I think he ends up off the roster. I didn't predict a practice squad. That's impossible to do anyway. But I think that Gerald Christian, the number, so Cardinals have another draft pick that gets cut this year.
I agree.
Offensive line, I have them keeping eight. And that is, well, it will be eight with the knowledge that Massey's going to start the season on the reserve suspended list, so he doesn't count. So Bobby Massey's sitting there in reserve. He doesn't count. And then we're going Jared Valdir, Mike Iupati, Niles Sendlein. I think he will end up being the starter, as is expected. Jonathan Cooper, DJ Humphreys, A.Q. Shipley, Earl Watford, and Bradley Sal. Ted Larson is off. I think once they signed Lyle, that was kind of the writing is on the wall for Larson. And yep. Anthony Steen, I think, at best is doing practice squad because of the guys they have ahead of him.
I agree, and I thought Larson would compete at center, and obviously he just hasn't shown up. So
let's go to the defensive side. So far it has, I believe it's 26 offensive slots it has taken of the 53. I only went with seven defensive linemen because of the positions elsewhere, and so this is where I went. I went with the three starters, Frosty Rucker, Corey Peters, Calais Campbell. Then I went with Corey Redding, the veteran backup. And then we have three young guys, Rodney Gunter, Xavier Williams, and Ed Stinson. Matt Shaughnessy gets bumped here for what I'm not sure what the deal is with his play, why he's back so far. Josh Morrow is another guy that gets bumped. And more noticeably, Alameda Te'amu. Now, I made a mistake on some of my projection. I had him originally on there, and I wrote that there were five receivers, even though I really intended on having six receivers. So Alameda was actually my 54th player. But I think he gets bumped, especially with the flexibility of Williams. You've got Corey Peters and Xavier Williams, who are definitely can play nose tackle, and Rodney Gunter has the potential to be able to do so. And Ed Stinson has played well, and he's getting a lot of playing time in the two, so I think he's showing that he can do it. As we were talking before, we thought Ed Stinson might be a guy that they let go. I think Stinson makes the roster.
Yeah, I'm interested. The one thing that you talked about is I'm interested if Shaughnessy makes the roster, only because he can do the down and up thing, whereas Ed Stinson's kind of only down. So that's the only one. Stinson versus Shaughnessy for that kind of kind of final spot on that defensive line. Because of the flexibility. And if you keep seven, right, like, then all of a sudden you've got a guy that can play linebacker as well, so.
That is true. Although, on a 3-4 line, you really only ever play six anyway.
Yeah.
At inside linebacker, I have them going with four. Sean Weatherspoon, yes. Kevin Minter, yes. And then I think Kenny Demons has kind of locked himself. And then the fourth guy, I believe it's going to be, at the end of the day, it's not going to be Edwin Jackson. It's not going to be Gabe Mart. I think it's going to be Alani Fua. He flashed a little bit. And plus, he has a different skill set. He's longer, he's faster than the other guys, and he doesn't, otherwise you end up, because Kevin Minter, Kenny Demms are kind of the same player, and Alani Fua can do in terms of style. And Alani Fua has a little bit faster, he's a little bit longer, and he's able to play out in space and in coverage a little bit more. And I think that they see more upside with him, and hopefully, I would expect he can do things on special teams as well.
Dude, that was just a home stretch, huh? BYU and everything. no.
And I'll tell you what I texted Joe on this, and that is, I know nothing about BYU football.
you know what? I think I just don't know if Fuller gets cut over, or if it's Fuller or Martin. I don't know. Like, that's going to be an interesting battle, because I thought Martin was the better player on Saturday. But I get what you're saying about Fua and kind of the versatility and the ability to things. But I think Martin's a better linebacker. And, you know, the fact that Sean Weatherspoon, right? So he's going to be hurt sometime.
You mean already? Then,
yeah, exactly. I don't know. I'm going back and forth on this one. I see your point, but I like what Gabe Martin did in game one. I think it's going to be closer as the season as it continues to progress.
Well, and that's what this is the fun speculation. You've got your point there with Martin. He did play really well, and I know that Edward Jackson is another guy that the coaching staff likes. We look at outside linebacker. I've got Shaq Riddick going to injured reserve. I think that's where he'll end up. Lorenzo Alexander, Alex Ofer, Lamar Woodley, Marcus Golden, and Kareem Martin. They're going to go with five at the outside linebacker position, and I think that makes sense to me.
Do you think Shaq gets popped, or do you think he just gets IR'd for the season?
I think they'll IR him because I think they like his upside well enough to hold him on, to hold keep him on the roster until final cuts, and then just IR him instead of waiving. You can waive injure him, but if he doesn't pass waivers, then you lose him. If he does class waiver, he ends up on injured reserve anyway.
Yeah. I'm with that. I mean, like I said, Shaughnessy's the only one I question, and not because he's anything great, but just because of their versatility to do multiple things. Because then all of a sudden you can keep an extra, inside linebacker or extra corner, So that's my only thing.
And cornerback, I have them keeping four, but that fourth guy is not on this roster. Patrick Peterson, Jerod Powers, Justin Bethel. Before Saturday, I would have said it was a lock, Jimmy Legree. I believe now it will be a cornerback that is now on another roster.
Yeah, I thought, that was tough. Those corners got abused. Those second team, because Powers didn't play, so... Yeah, those second 13 corners got lit up. That was kind of rough.
And at safety, there was a player I could sneak on in the rest, but I didn't have the numbers. Dalen Buchanan, Rashad Johnson, Ty Matthew, they're locks on the roster. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
Chris Clements was an interesting case because he became, and it was interesting as I saw through training camp last year. Every once in a while they would go seven defensive backs. And Justin Bethel was that seventh defensive back. But when they've done that, it wasn't Bethel. It was safety Chris Clements, the guy they signed after Andre Ellington won the injured reserve. And he's an interesting guy. He's got some experience, but he got hurt. I'd like to put him on the roster, but there's nowhere to put him.
Well, that happens a lot. But like I said, if you cut Ed and up Shaq, and then you got an extra spot. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, I think it's before. Clemens has got an uphill battle, so you're not going to get any playing time. But he is good depth. It's tough. Because, all four of those guys that you keep are going to get playing time, right? Significant playing time. Not he played five snaps tonight.
Yeah, all four of those safeties play because they all four on the field when they go dime.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 25 snaps a game probably for each of them. So, and obviously Buchanan and Tyran and Johnson will get more, but Tony Jefferson's going to get 20-25 snaps a game too. So it's tough to be a fifth on this roster.
On the specialists, obviously Chandler Catanzaro is going to be the kicker. Mike Leach is going to be a long snapper, but I have based on one game alone, these are my speculation, that Drew Butler's going to end up passing Dave Zastadil. I know that... I know that is not a popular decision, but you know what happens with old players. You know what happens with old players. They can fall off the mountain that quick.
Yeah, with bad legs, too.
So
didn't Zasty hurt his hamstring or quad or something?
It was
his
groin last year, and he missed the
somewhere
first game. He came back, then injured it again, ended up on injured reserve, so...
Right. Yeah. Well, you're that age, Jeff. You know, once you do something, you're basically done for.
Yep. That's how it is when you're old like me. Seth, you're coming up on that, so watch out.
know. I'll be 30 this year. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. As we about to wrap this up, so we've gone through the roster, we've talked about the last game. Is there anything in particular that you're looking for as they play the Chargers this weekend?
I mean, I want to see Logan continue to play well. I think that's big. I want to see DJ, because San Diego doesn't really have any pass rushers. Don't tell anybody. But so I want to see DJ do a little bit better in the pass sets against top of the line guys. I think that's important. And maybe one sack, like one finish. Just one. I don't want a lot, but like just one. Just to break the ice.
That would make sense. I want to see more of Logan Thomas. I actually want to see what Chris Jackson has, even though he's going to be knocking off the rust. I want Andre Ellington to run the ball more than twice and get more than a couple of yards. I want to see something from him in the running game. We know he's dynamic in the pass game, and maybe that will be enough this year. After that, you know, I want to see the young corners behind Bethel do something. Something.
Yeah,
something other than get toasted.
Yeah. I think when you look at it, right, like this game is going to kind of be important because, like you said, there are, as good as this roster is, there's definitely some spots to make your way on. I think that wide receiver 5-6 battle, not necessarily who's on it, but where the depth chart flows to, right, I think that's interesting. The Williams versus Taylor battle is interesting, and then I think you've got, as you said, that is somebody going to step up and be that fourth corner, and then who wins that fourth linebacker job? All those are interesting to watch, and you know, maybe not fun, you know, but it's fun to have like fourth string battles, right, instead of
first string battles. Yeah, that is true. That is true. Well, that wraps
it up. Everybody stays healthy.
Yes, absolutely. If we're going to have injuries, let them be the camp bodies. And as much as I feel for those individuals, a guy like Brandon Person, who is going to have a hard time making a roster, there is a big plus there. Granted, it means probably he won't get another shot next year, tearing an ACL. But he does get 1 year's worth of NFL money. That's the one thing that's positive. But that wraps it up for another edition of Revenge of the Birds Radio. We are getting ready for game two of the preseason this weekend. And our next show we're going to have our two a week. I will be on the air. Well, actually not on the air, as we are now recording offline. So I will record with Bolts from the Blue, our SB Nation Charger site. John Gennaro, I don't dream. If those of you who have been around for at least the whole year, you remember the interview that I did with him last year before the season opener. We went nearly an hour and a half. It was one of the best preview interviews that we've had. On behalf of Revenge of the Birds Radio, I'm Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. Have yourself a wonderful day, and thank you for listening to the show.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.